Let's get to our local view a tad later than usual, but we all adjusted to spring ahead, so you'll be fine. He's the columnist for the Register Guard. See what he's up to on the cover of the sports section, online, registerguard.com. On Twitter, the handle at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. How are you doing?
All righty. I read your piece on Mercedes Russell, all-earth basketball player, when she was here at Springfield, left for Tennessee. At the time of her recruitment, it seemed like there would be no chance she would pick Oregon or Oregon State. But I'll tell you what, to think that those two schools, OSU's made a Final Four, and the Ducks have gone as far as Tennessee, the Elite Eight, that almost seems unfathomable, doesn't it?
Yeah, you never could have predicted that at the time because Oregon State, you know, I think Scott Ruick had been there a couple years, was really digging out from rock bottom, and Oregon pretty much was at rock bottom. You know, I don't even know how hard Oregon recruited Mercedes Russell at the time, which is crazy to think about when you've got the number one player in the country right in your backyard. I think maybe they knew that they didn't have much of a shot. So Mercedes ends up going to Tennessee. And actually starting kind of a pipeline of players from Oregon who went on to play at Tennessee. But, you know, the two local schools, despite missing out on some of the best players in their own backyard, have done pretty well for themselves.
Yeah, that's an understatement at this point. And to be perfectly honest, I didn't really follow her career with the Vols that closely. I mean, A, they're in Tennessee, and it hasn't really been the same Tennessee for the better part of 8 or 9 years. So for myself and those who might have lost touch, and by the way, Tennessee's last Final Four was 10 years ago. What kind of career has she had as far as her, you know, standing among all those legends like Shamik Holdsclaw or Candace Parker?
Yeah, you know, she ended up having a really solid career there. She was hurt early in her career. She had to sit out a whole year because she had surgery on both of her feet. But her last 2 years have been really strong. She's averaged like 16 points and 8 or 9 rebounds the last couple years, and is up there on the school career list for double doubles. I think she was tied with Candace Parker on that list. And she's in the top 5 on rebounds and block shots. So she ended up having a really solid career there. But, yeah, no trip to the Final Four. That was the last thing that she wanted to do. And Tennessee had to get by Oregon State to get there and couldn't do it on their home floor. Oregon State was the first team out of 58. Tennessee was 57-0 at home in the NCAA tournament. And Oregon State was the first person to beat him.
That's just fantastic. Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So I remember I always knew the quartet, 15 seeds to win an NCAA tournament game. You know, there was Richmond in 1991, Steve Nash in Santa Clara, Coppin State, then Hampton. But it was those 16s, Princeton almost over Alonzo Mourning and Georgetown. So this year, how nuts is it that not only did we get that upset, but it wasn't even a nail-biter? UMBC just destroyed Virginia.
You know, it's funny because everybody was talking about, could this be the year that a 16 seed beats a 1? But the 16 that everybody was talking about was Penn,
right,
who was supposedly the best 16 seed ever. So, you know, me following Kansas, being from Kansas, everybody leading up to it was talking about, is this the year that Penn beats Kansas and becomes the first 16 seed to win a game? Well, of course, KU won that game fairly easily. Nobody predicted that UMBC would be the team to do it. I remember being in Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament, seeing that UMBC line on the board against Vermont in the conference title game that they had to win just to get in the tournament. They were a big underdog, so they shouldn't even have been in the tournament. And then they beat the number one overall seed by 20 points. It's just incredible.
You know, by the numbers, two double-digit seeds are standing. But we've had 3 advance 13 times, 5 in 1999. And while that's a nice piece of history, I think, you know, you look at the Michigan game, Loyola Chicago, the upset of Virginia down to the wire with a lot of other games. So beyond the numbers, do we put this weekend up there for just pure entertainment and wow factor?
Well, I think it's been one of the most unpredictable and one of the craziest opening weekends we've had. You know, they all run together, and it feels like we say this every year. You know, we've never had an opening weekend like this, but in some ways it is true this year when you look at what you just broke down of the number of, you know, lower seeds that advanced. You know, it's been kind of feast or famine. There have been some really great games. There have also been some real dogs.
Yep.
You know, there have been some teams that just could not put the ball in the basket, you know, including that second-round game with UMBC and Kansas State. You know, it certainly was not easy on the eyes. But there have been some great finishes. You know, even that Michigan-Houston game, which was not necessarily thrilling to watch for a lot of the game, but the ending was great. It's been a wild weekend, an unpredictable weekend, and certainly some of the best moments we're going to remember for a long time.
Now, a thought on Oregon men's basketball. We know they're off the greatest season ever, and everyone but, you know, Peyton Pritchard left. They had some moments this year, and just I thought it was really lacking when it came time to make a big shot. So from the nowhere to go but down from the Final Four team to some nice talent returning and arriving, how would you evaluate, I guess, this season and what the excitement level maybe should be for next?
Well, I had a good chat with Dana Altman in Las Vegas after the Pac-12 tournament just to kind of get his unfiltered thoughts a little bit on the season. He thought that they would be a better team this year. I think he was as surprised as anybody that they didn't have a better season. But you know, there's going to be some holes that they need to fill. You know, they need somebody who can create a little bit. I think we saw that with this team that, you know, they needed to get shots out of their offense because they didn't have anybody who could just go get a bucket when they needed one. Troy Brown was not necessarily that guy, although he had a fairly solid freshman year. So, you know, they're going to be in a similar position next year of they're going to have to rely on their freshmen. I would expect Oregon to probably go get a grad transfer or two. It sounds like they're in the mix for a point guard who was committed to Arizona who has decommitted, so that'll help them to bring in another ball handler. But they have some holes to fill. You know, they're going to have a lot of hype and expectations next year with the recruiting class they have coming in. I think they'll be a better team next year, but I think this year revealed, you know, that they really do have some holes to fill, and they're probably going to be relying on a lot of young players to fill those holes, and that's always kind of a dicey proposition.
Sure is. Let's move to the women's team. We continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. I know a lot of us have talked about it for more than a year. You wrote about it before the Seattle game Friday. Nationally, you see a coach like Nick Saban or others who make millions win titles, and they just seem miserable. So along with the on-court success, I mean, you wrote that this team has had as much fun and enjoyment playing together as basically any other team you've seen up close?
Yeah, this team is a real joy to cover. You know, they've got personality. They have a lot of fun. They're very open. They're very accessible. You know, you root for teams like that just from the standpoint that you wish every team could be that way. And all these teams who have the attitude that, you know, we have to run this team like a military operation or like a top secret CIA bunker mentality. You know, we have to do that because that's the only way you can succeed in sports. You root for the teams that prove that, no, you don't have to do it that way. You can be really open and accessible, and you can invite the fans in, and you can make this feel like a big family and a community endeavor. That's what the Oregon women have done. You know, they really have bonded with this community. You know, they've been really easy to root for, and they just have been a great story, and they're fun to cover. And you just, you know, setting aside any rooting interest that I have, I like to see people succeed. I like to see good people succeed. And so that's why it's easy to root for the Oregon women.
Yeah, a buddy of mine gave the most in-depth four-word answer to this conversation. We were talking about how great they are and how easy it is to root for them. He says, how do you not? It's literally as simple as that. In-depth yeah. analysis from Steve's friends. And, of course, it starts with Coach Graves, who confessed, I think you said, to maybe he threw an item or two in frustration in long-ago years. And there are times where a coach probably needs to get angry or read the riot act. It's just that he seems to be a guy who understands a high-level player in 2018 is not the same person as 1998. Would it be accurate to say he just finds ways to make those connections and is just, his positivity is contagious?
Yeah, I mean, if you watch him during a game, he's certainly intense during a game.
Yep.
And if you watch him in practice, you know, he's serious in practice. Usually he's got a smile on his face when he's not coaching the team, but he certainly is serious when it's called for. But I think the thing he does really well is, you know, he's able to have that relationship with players where he can be serious and he can say something tough to the players, but yet they have such a good relationship beyond that, that the players understand, you know, that what he's doing is for their benefit, and, you know, they don't take it personally, because when you're around him, you know, outside of basketball, he's just such a, you know, an easy guy to talk to, and, you know, such a great personality. So, you know, he's really found the right balance, and he made the point, and I think it's a good point, that the coaching in 2018 with this generation of players is not exactly what it used to be. And you see coaches all around the country getting in trouble for their coaching style because they're trying to coach players the way they were coached back in 1978, well, you just can't do that anymore. A, players don't respond to it. It doesn't work as well. And B, you end up getting fired for it. So I think it's smart that coaches now are adapting how they coach. And it's not that there's not discipline or structure. There's certainly discipline and there's structure. But there's, you know, a flexibility to the approach and a freedom that the players have that I think really connects with this particular generation in this particular sport.
Well, I could attest to the fact that you picked 1978. I can tell you how long ago that was. It was the year I graduated high school. So enough said there.
I'm sure that your high school coach never had to yell at you for anything.
Don Kovaleski, I think if he saw me on the street now, he'd throw that board at me. final thought for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. It might sound simple, and of course you've been to a lot of great events, Major Bowls, World Series, as a fan, March Madness. Not that long ago, you attend a women's basketball game at Matthew Knight Arena. You could probably buy a round for everybody and not max out your miles card. What did you think of the atmosphere this weekend, be it the fans and the students here in town at MKA?
Well, it was great. It was a great atmosphere. You know, one of the cool parts about my job, along with getting to come on the radio with you every week,
which
is,
nice,
you know, top of the list. one of the cool parts about my job is people in Eugene really appreciate women's sports. When you cover women's sports, you don't feel like, oh, now I got to go cover this thing that nobody cares about. People here embrace it. Now, they embrace it a lot more when the team is having success. Like you mentioned, not a lot of people were embracing women's basketball a few years ago when the team wasn't very good. But people have gotten on the bandwagon, and they've really bought into it. And it's made it fun to cover, because there's a lot of passion for it in the community. So, you know, yeah, a few years ago, maybe I would have thought, okay, I'm going to go do a column on the Oregon women, and, you know, let's see how many page views this gets. It's not going to be very many. Well, now it's like, that's the thing people want to talk about. It, you know, you walk around town, people want to talk about the women's basketball team, and I think that's really cool.
By the way, I sat where I usually do. Where the heck were you guys on Sunday? I couldn't find you or Thorburn or anybody.
I think it's an NCAA thing where you have to have a press row, a press table set up courtside. So we actually got the upgrade. We were sitting right down by the court.
All right. I was looking and looking. I was like, I know there's an NCAA deal, or maybe They're trying to tell me something. But
I don't mean to make you jealous and flaunt our courtside status there, but that is the answer to your question.
Well, you also went to a bunch more games than I did, so you earned it. All right, Austin Meek, so you'll be staying local and following along with the rest of us. Enjoy the tournament, enjoy the women's tournament, and next week we'll be talking about what happened this weekend, A, and B, the fast approaching MLB season. So thanks as always, Austin. Look forward to next week.
All right, me too. Thanks, Steve.
Take it easy.